convene the Subcommittee on Licensure. The chair notes there's a quorum. Representative Abler moves House File 2035.
Will you refer to the policy?
No, well...
That'd be the motion for now, and you can do something in the policy.
Okay, why don't we refer to the policy committee?
Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative
Abler. And there's also an amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment. And maybe Ms. Ayes could describe the nature of it, just to keep it short.
Ms. Ayes?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment is really just a technical amendment, changing some cross-references in a section to subdivisions that changed when we did some renumbering. Changing some hour requirements. They're more percentage requirements than they are absolute hour requirements in terms of licensure. And that's about it. It's just basically technical.
Representative Abler incorporates his own amendments.
Actually, I think we have to move it because I'm bringing a bill.
All right. Let's move the amendment A1.
So move, Mr. Chair.
All right. Incorporated. We probably don't need to vote for this.
Well, no, we have a bill.
All right. Let's vote on the A1, the amendment that was just described. All those in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Amendment adopted.
Let it roll, Mr. Chair. And it's my, and I want to thank the committee for coming again on this large number of amount of paper, but very small actual. And I think that the committee would like a brief review of the operating. Most of them have been private with the principals here. So perhaps if my witness could describe in brief what it is we're doing. And the members can ask questions if they have it. Stay brief.
Introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Frank Merriman. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work. The Minnesota Board of Social Work has initiated this legislative proposal, which we're very grateful to Representative Abler for carrying. But the board was responding to requests from social workers in the community who were asking for different and more important standards for clinical practice. And the upshot of some of the discussion in the social work community, as well as among the other mental health professionals, was the establishment of a task force that was spearheaded by the Department of Human Services. This was a legislative directive that the DHS studied this issue in cooperation with the health licensing boards. So the Board of Social Work, along with the other mental health boards, participated on this committee, on the task force, along with clinicians, social work educators, and association representatives, and other people from the practicing community. And over, and this was the outgrowth of a very long period of time looking at these issues. The task force came up with some recommendations, which was forwarded to the legislature January 15th of this year, trying to establish minimum standards for clinical practice on the part of all mental health professionals. The Board of Social Work is basing this bill on the recommendations in that task force. And as I would like to emphasize, the task force represents a consensus on the part of the task force members and all of the mental health professionals and regulators who were involved in that study.
Just give the specific changes.
Yes, and I would like to pass out a brief summary of the changes. I apologize for the length of the bill, but on the advice of the revisor's office, we ended up recodifying the entire bill, or the entire Practice Act under which the Board of Social Work operates. But the changes are all in the two-page handout that we've handed out. Which have to do with requirements for clinical practice, requirements for supervision, and requirements for continuing education. We have with us today several experts who could address the subcommittee if the subcommittee so chooses. We have a member of the board who was intimately involved in the development of the proposal. We have association representatives and others. Would it be a pleasure of the chair to hear from other witnesses?
Mr. Chair, I think that there would be available if members have questions. So whatever, you can go long and short. I'm picking short if that's the pleasure of the committee. But we don't want to be minimal.
Sure. Representative Abel, and I guess if members on the committee have questions, we'll bring them on board. I do have one question. Who was part of this task force that put this together?
Mr. Chair, members, perhaps I could refer to Gary Cox from the Department of Human Services, who was the person from DHS who was spearheading the task force.
Mr. Cox, state your name for the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Gary Cox. I'm a manager with the Children's Mental Health Division at the Department of Human Services and was the assigned staff person for this task force. The task force comprised member representatives of each of the mental health professional licensing boards, the professional associations for each of the disciplines, some academic professionals from the training schools, a number of advocates and consumer organizations, as well as provider associations, and so it was an extremely broad-based group. And each of those classes had representatives at the table. Our group had the task force met four times, 3 hours apiece. It was a very intensive meeting and a lot of email exchanges.
Well, I take it was a good working group then.
It was a great working group.
Mr. Cox, from the department, are there any fiscal notes to this proposal here? Or?
The department, no, we have been not requested to provide any fiscal notes yet. We don't expect that there would be any fiscal note. If one is assigned to us, we certainly would take a look at it, but I wouldn't expect that there would be a fiscal note.
Okay. Any questions from the members? Representative Norton.
Do you want questions? Are you going to do a more formal presentation, or do you just want us to start asking questions? I'm unsure about it.
I think we could ask questions right now.
We're sitting the time for questions.
Okay. I just have a couple. Under the line 15.30 to 16.14, when you talk about a reciprocity from other states, I know in other fields, reciprocity includes passing an exam at a certain level, and I'm not sure if you have the same, if they have to reach a certain score on their licensing exam in order to be licensed in the state of Minnesota, and if so, does reciprocity mean if you have a license in another state, you'll accept it, or if you have the same score on the test that you had to pass in the other state?
Mr. Mayor.
Dear Representative, I'm going to defer to our licensing expert for this
question.
State your name for the record and we'll proceed.
Good morning. My name is Kate Zacherke. I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Board of Social Work, Chair Tao, and members of the committee. At this point in time in Minnesota, we have a model called endorsement rather than reciprocity, but is very similar. If an individual holds a license in another state and wants to engage in practice in Minnesota, they are required to meet Minnesota requirements. They must have the accredited degree. They must take and pass the national licensing examination. They must also document supervised practice if it is required for that particular license.
And that was the question I was getting at. And my experience has been with the Board of Psychology. There, the state of Minnesota has a particular level with which you must pass the test, which happens to be higher than many of the other states surrounding. And so if you have transferred from, say, the state of Nebraska or Iowa with a 2 points lower score, Minnesota does not offer reciprocity until you pass the exam at Minnesota's level. And I was looking to see if you were keeping that same level of expertise, if you will, in social work.
Exactly.
Yes. Chair Tao and Representative Norton, in Minnesota, how the examination works, excuse me, is that it is a national exam. And so a passing score is a passing score is a passing score across the country. So that is consistent across the nation. The scores really do not vary from state to state.
Excellent idea. Wish that were true of all of you.
Do you have any more questions?
I have a couple other questions.
On a roll, go ahead.
Okay, and I apologize for this. In looking at the bill before, I had the cheat sheet here. It was very difficult to decide what was new and what was not new. So I'm just quickly running over this and underlining a couple things. Could you just explain the difference between the LISW and the LICSW? And also, and maybe before that, you could talk. There's a difference between clinically practicing clinically and not practicing clinically, and those were just a couple definitions. I was hoping you could clarify both of those.
Ms. Zacherpate.
Yes, Representative Tao and Representative Norton. In Minnesota, we do have four different social work licenses, one baccalaureate level and three master's degree levels. Specifically, the difference between the LISW license and the LICSW license is that one is the LISW is advanced generalist. It would be a social worker who is more engaged in macro practice, more administrative scope practice, and the LICSW in Minnesota is the independent clinical license. And so those two licenses are really differentiated by their scope of practice, because certainly in social work, not all social workers are clinicians.
Thank you for those definitions. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep reading. And
go ahead, Representative.
I have questions. Are
you finished?
I'm finished for now, but I'm going to keep looking at the chair.
Are there any additional questions from members?
Question about that.
Well, if not, I mean, do we have additional Representative Abram?
As long as we have an army of people that would like to talk, but I said that they would only need to talk if there were questions.
Right. Well, it seems like we don't have any more questions.
So we could hold this over.
Let me ask Representative Norton, are you comfortable moving forward, or you want more time to... Because this is moving to the
policy,
but I would like to take as less time as possible in policy as well.
I think I'm fine at this point. Thank you.
Okay. So why don't we proceed to the vote? Chair renews Representative Abrams' motion that this be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee of Health and Human Service Policy as amended. Those in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yeah, bill adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you to the testifiers for coming up. Okay, Representative Abler moves House File 2043. And why don't we proceed with the testifier then?
Mr. Chair, I do have an oral amendment.
All right.
In the drafting, we included health insurance, and that was not the intention of anybody. And so if I could delete sections 1 and 2, you'll have read us testimony in the insurance industry to do that. We want your medical and health partners to board the class of that. If this is a good idea, it's a good idea for a different place and different companies. Not at all what their intention is.
What I was going to do when it
gets in the form that I would have, it would increase the level of licensure to another status, which we'll talk about, and include them in medical assistance once they've achieved that level. So that's
the point of this
bill here, not to put them in the health insurance.
So if I could delete sections, we have
to know. Representative Abel moves to delete section 1 and 2. Any questions on the members? Okay. All those in favor of the oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, amendment adopted.
Okay. You have some handouts, and then I'll
proceed to testimony.
Why don't we proceed? Ma'am, state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Carrie Rexco. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. And first and foremost, I really want to thank the Chair Tao and Representative Abler and all of you and all of the staff members and everybody who made it possible for us to be at this hearing today. to talk to you about professional clinical counselors. And the bill you have before you is the result of more than 2 years of effort, and it will create a second level of licensure for counselors in Minnesota, the licensed professional clinical counselor. And it is critical for the future of professional counseling in Minnesota that this clinical level be established. And as you have heard from others here today, our bill is also based on the recommendations in the DHS Task Force report. And you should have the fact sheet. I'm sorry you didn't get this earlier. We didn't know we were going to make it today. So I can go through each of the items on the fact sheet that summarize what we're doing here.
Ms. Repsko.
Okay, the bill revises our practice act to create this clinical level, and it also adds licensed professional clinical counselors to the definition of mental health professional in the Adult Mental Health Act and the Children's Mental Health Act and to other statutory references to mental health professionals. And people wanting to practice at this level have to meet the requirements of the basic LPC level. They have to have a master's or doctoral degree in counseling from an accredited program or institution with 48 semester credits, and they also, in their first continuing ed cycle, have to do 12 additional graduate credits in counseling. And they have a supervised pre-degree field experience. The LPC license and the LPCC require content in 10 specific areas, and it's already in our law right now, so I didn't repeat it. But in addition to that, within that doctoral or master's degree, 24 semester credits must be in specific clinical areas, and these are the clinical areas identified by the task force. And that's diagnostic assessment for child and adult mental disorders, clinical treatment planning, clinical intervention methods, evaluation methodologies regarding the effectiveness of those interventions, and professional ethics and cultural diversity related to clinical practice. Like the other mental health professionals, LPCCs will need to have 4,000 hours of post-degree supervised clinical practice in treating adults and children. And 4,000 hours equates to 2 years of supervised practice. They must also pass a national clinical exam. And the national examinations for counseling are done through the National Board for Certified Counselors, and those scores, also the passing scores, are set by that entity and our nationwide passing scores. Because we have followed the recommendations of the task force, we believe and know that this proposal is non-controversial at this point. And indeed, the participants in the task force, specifically on, I believe it's page 23, supported the creation of the LPCC and said it may be a boon to outstate Minnesota to have more professionals available. And as you have heard from Mr. Cox, from the department, I don't believe there's been a fiscal note on this bill either. But he can speak to you further about that. And our effective date for our proposal is August 1st of 2007, because we don't have anybody at this level right now, and we would like to become part of the medical assistance system. And so, what can I tell you?
Okay. And Mr. Chair, there was a proposal last year to simply add LPCs to a medical assistance. That's part of the great controversy, if you were part of that. And so we created this task force as a compromise, and actually it worked. And the two bills you've heard this morning has been specifically the product of a good policy discussion outside of the legislature. And this very bill is a product of that. So, and it was determined that the task force that indeed the LPC credential wasn't sufficient. So by creating a new credential with another training, et cetera, that they would apply. That's our testimony. I mean, Mr. Cox.
Yeah, I would like Mr. Cox to come and make a couple comments on, I think, in particular, since the reimbursing the counselors with medical assistance, I believe. Can you explain how that doesn't have a fiscal impact on that? Or
We think primarily, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the fiscal impact, if it happens at all, would be over a long term. It's going to take all LPCs and other people who intend to seek these qualifications a number of years to get themselves ready for it, I think. And then what will happen is that the increased services that they provide, we believe, will have probably a positive fiscal impact on the state overall, because more people receiving higher quality services are going to reduce the level of severity of mental illness and severe emotional disturbance in children and adults. And I think that the social impact will be very positive, and over the long term we're going to see positive economic So a fiscal impact from a bill like this, just because people's treatment is better, more effective, and comes quicker.
Mr. Cox, can you just give us a summary of the working group and how it got to this point?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the task force was put together during the summer, last summer, and we met four times in the fall of last year. And completed our work in the late fall and finalized the task force report by January 15th and had it on over here to the legislature by the end of January. The committee or the task force comprised people who had been working on this issue for a number of years. As Representative Abler alluded to, there had been some controversy that had, I believe the genesis of that was in 2005, if I recall. A group of broad stakeholders, which at that point the department was just a participant like everybody else in these meetings, that worked out this notion of the licensed professional clinical counselor. And It took a while to come to some agreement. I think the bottom line was that the department was asking for some educational standards that were a bit unreasonable at the time, and it took a while for things to come around. And in order to encourage us to reach compromise, Representative Abler introduced the bill last year to create this task force. As a result of those meetings, all these broad stakeholders came together from all these disciplines, developed this set of common standards for the master's trained professional. And by the time we were all done with it, we had what I think all the members of the task force agreed was what we called a baseline of standards that created a baseline of competence for mental health professionals in the state. And the department's expectations on this are very simple. We think that these standards are going to create higher quality mental health care, greater access to higher quality care. Both of these bills meet those standards, and I think what we're going to see is greater access, particularly in rural areas, to high quality mental health care. That's the department's expectation from this task force.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Norton.
Thank you, Chair Tao and Representative Abler. You gave us this stuff last time and said, read up on it, so I did. So I could ask the question. So, yeah. You're getting what you asked for. It's my understanding that there are three levels. There's an LP, an LPC, and an LPCC, and we haven't talked about the LP much. That's, I think, fairly well established. As I understand it, the LP is going to be primarily, or at least future forward, primarily PhDs. I hear people talking from the audience. Sorry, I'm not sure.
Representative
Richard. Well, pronounce your name.
Rexical.
Rexical. Ms. Rexical.
Yeah, the LPs are licensed psychologists, and they are licensed by the Minnesota Board of Psychology, a separate board.
And that was actually one of the questions I had. Thank you for that, because as I was doing some research in there, there's the Board of Psychology, and then what I understand is the Board of Behavioral Health, but I wasn't seeing that reference in here, and I maybe just missed the reference. So that's who's licensing LPCs and LPCCs?
That's correct.
Okay.
And I did notice that in the draft of the bill, it does say 148, and it really should say 148B.
Thank you.
So maybe that was because psychology is in Chapter 148.
Thank you. And then the LPC, which, as I understand it, is it okay if I continue? I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Representative.
The LPC is a relatively new designation anyway, and you've done a nice job explaining that it was put into place, that there were perhaps some issues, and as I'm understanding the move from an LPC to an LPCC, it appears to be, and if I'm wrong, please tell me, a way to delineate higher qualified professionals for so that they can be reimbursed. But ultimately, that's what this is about.
Ms. Ripsicle.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Norton, in many ways, the system, as you can imagine, is all related. People must be paid for their services. And LPCs are quality mental health providers right now. They just are unable to obtain employment opportunities and get insurance reimbursement with the credentials in place. And the LPC will always be a necessary credential, especially for students just coming out of graduate school that need to complete that professional practice for 2 years. So we don't see that level as going away. The LPCC is the ultimate goal, I would say, for most practitioners.
Mr. Cox?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, as you can imagine, the department is much less concerned about the support of a particular profession and their ability to make a living, but much more concerned about the quality of care that's provided by the mental health professionals available to our adults and children. And what we see coming out of this bill is an entire new class of qualified mental health professionals, which will increase the access to good quality mental health care in the state. We think it's fine that people are able to be paid for their services, but obviously our concern is for the results of the treatment that they receive, and we think that this is going to improve that care substantially and make it the access far greater in the state in areas particularly where there is officially defined mental health professional shortage areas.
Representative Norton?
Thank you. And to that point, it's kind of the if you build it, they will come. And from what I heard from testimony last week, we thought that was going to be true in the social worker example, and in fact that was not realized. So what is an incentive? Is it the MA reimbursement that will be the incentive for people to move up for this higher level so that, as you mentioned, quality care and access is increased? Is the MA, is that going to be the carrot, if you will?
Sure, I'll react. And this was a group that we needed people to come to. This group here was the one. And so the thought is that by getting a medical assistance available, at least with a better credential, then they will indeed, that would make it be a boon to this. So this is a big desire of the
423. So I'm sorry. Thank you, Chair. So you think that will even impact the bill that we heard last week as well, that the social worker group that we talked about before will continue their education and become the LPCC because of the reimbursement.
Just to clarify, the social work bill was the last group that we did.
No, it was the one last week. I'm sorry. I'm referring to the one we talked about.
This is the same one that was here.
Right.
And so this stays there with three bills. This is the third and the final. Thankfully, I guess. So this is hopefully by getting more reimbursement that they will attract more people. But if you want to hear it from...
It's Representative.
Representative Norton. Yes, I was here last week talking about the necessity to increase fees. By law, we are required to do that. And if that is what you're referring to, I believe this will be a very important in increasing our numbers and helping us chip away at the deficit.
Thank you. And I have one last question. Thank you, Tertow. The last question is in subdivision, it's in Section 7 on degrees from foreign institutions. I just want to make sure that it's implicit in this reading, and I did not go back and check all the references, and I'm assuming you'll know this, that these individuals also have to pass the exam. It does not say that in this writing. It just talks about being evaluated. But these individuals from foreign institutions also have to pass the exam. Is that correct?
Ms. Russico.
Thank you. Representative Norton, yes, in evaluating foreign trained persons, they must meet the same requirements that U.S. practitioners would meet, and that would include passing of a national exam or an equivalent exam.
Thank you.
National practice.
Ms. Riffsko, I'm just curious. I know that with this bill, you'll be reimbursed with MA money. How were you paid before? I'm just kind of curious about how the system works. You know, I'm up here. I have no clue.
Chair Tao, I'm not sure I exactly understand the question.
Currently, how are you reimbursed or paid?
Okay, LPCs, some of them have been able to be reimbursed for their services by private insurance companies. They've had a difficult time. They still are employed in facilities with MA clients, and you know, they're just another provider supervising them, I would imagine, would be responsible for those services. So they just cannot get in the door without this opportunity. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Mr. Cox?
Chairman Talbot, this bill, by creating a higher standard of professional counselor, puts those services within the realm of medically necessary services under the Minnesota Medical Assistance Statutes and the Federal Medicaid Statutes. It makes this an entire new class of people available to the Minnesota healthcare programs. I presume that would serve as an incentive to people who want to get into that profession, but it would certainly, and from the department's point of view, would make these people available to Minnesota healthcare programs. Once they reach this level of qualifications defined in this bill, then they meet the medical assistance provider eligibility standards.
Mr. Cox, how many people are we anticipating in trying to get this up to this level in the next year or so? Is there some projection somewhere? Ms. Ripsco?
Chair Tao, yes. Right now there are only 423 licensed professional counselors in Minnesota. It's an unknown how many might qualify right away. We have a number of licensees who had clinical credentials from another state and came in through reciprocity. So my most optimistic estimate might be as many as half of our people would qualify.
200.
But likely it's going to take a number of months, and they'll have to meet all those requirements, and if they haven't, they'll have to go back to grad school and pick up those specific credits in those areas. So it's very difficult to estimate. That would be the most optimistic.
Yeah, Representative Norton.
To that point, the one piece that will probably be difficult, and you mentioned the rural area, is the supervision piece by a PhD or by someone that's approved. There aren't very many out there, and I know that's a barrier now, so that's going to be perhaps a barrier to these 423 getting, unless they live in an area that has a lot of PhDs or a lot of board-approved supervisors, that's going to be difficult. But, I admire the work that's been put into this, and I'm supportive of it. The one thing I will just mention, I think it is imperative that someone, and maybe you guys aren't the someone, share the information out there in the college, at college-level professors, and in the practice about what these licensures are. My husband teaches master's. He's a PhD psychologist. He teaches master's-level courses through St. Mary's University, and he doesn't understand the system. He has a hard time counseling the students that are coming through his – there will be LPCs or LPCCs, and he could supervise them, but he has found it very difficult with the changes over the last few years to understand the system, and we are indeed putting in another change. So I would just urge whomever is interested to please make sure that you reach all the people that need to have this information to counsel students.
So maybe we need the department to create a handy little reference guide, understanding health service providers in Minnesota or something.
Well, that would help the members on this committee as well.
Representative Norton and Mr. Chairman, the department is willing to come and talk to the committee at any time and try to explain the system to you. It's extremely complex. We understand that. We are in fact, at this moment, trying to develop some broad-based training for medical assistance providers and specifically mental health providers from Medical Assistance 101 all the way up through clinical training. It is extremely complex. We have people who have been working on this stuff for years, and they struggle with it every day, and we understand that the changes are coming fast and furious, responding not only to the Minnesota legislature, but more difficultly, we're responding to the federal government and changes in the environment. So it's hard to keep up, but feel free to challenge us on that at any moment.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Chair Tao. To Representative Norton's last point, though, in terms of what is currently done to inform our training institutions, higher ed institutions, about changes in what's required to serve as a professional in these fields. How is it marketed or shared with them?
You know.
It's RepSicle.
Yeah, Representative. The chair of the Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy is here, and he actually participates in a group of educators that meet on a regular basis, and he'd like to hear.
State your name for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nick Reese. I'm a licensed psychologist, a licensed professional counselor, and a cultural educator at Winona State in Rochester, actually. In answer to your question about preparation, to explain to students is very difficult, I think, partly because they hear what they want to hear and the system is complex. Now, what we've done with this, the current bill that's there is to talk to, there are two groups in Minnesota that basically train master's level people. One is called the Minnesota Association of Training Programs in Psychology, of which St. Mary's is one, and I meet with them regularly. The other is the Minnesota Association of Counselor Educators and Supervisors, which is, everybody is welcome, but they're basically at the state university systems. So we do try to get that across, and as a matter of fact, later this month, in April, if this bill goes through, I've been asked to go to St. Thomas and to St. Mary's, who are two Twin Cities providers, and talk to them about it. But it is a confusing system, and I know that we try to hammer it home, and we'll keep trying. And I think some of these things will simplify a little bit more when this becomes solidified, because then we can talk about it with assurance, as opposed to now, which we don't want to say anything, because then they have one more piece in there that isn't necessarily there, but it's confusing them.
Are there any more questions from members?
Looks like testify, Mr. Kelleher.
That was going to be my next. Anyone in the audience would want to testify for or against this bill or have some comments? Mr. Kelleher. You can't talk about crossovers.
No, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here representing the Minnesota Psychological Association. I've been working on this issue for over a decade in regards to professional counselors and their role in the mental health community. We had originally had some objections with Representative Abler's bill earlier last week. Representative Sherman Tano, you and I spoke. On Monday evening, my executive board of the Psychological Association met with some representatives of the professional counselors, and they were discussing the bill, and we are no longer opposed to the bill. This is something that the professional counselors have been striving for many years, and I think maybe this is the time to do that, and we are no longer opposed to the bill that's before you.
Seems like there's peace in the valley after all.
There is a technical amendment on this B thing. We have to. Ms. Ayes has a suggestion on a technical.
Ms. Ayes?
On page 2, line 23, it should read 148B.
The chair incorporates the oral amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Just to say just one final thing that occurred to me. On the fee bill, now that this is moving forward, on the fee bill, we deleted the references to this new status. We'll have to add that back somewhere along the line. Not today. Committee on the floor or something.
Add down the
right, not today.
The chair renews Representative Abler's motion to send this. Recommend this to pass and be referred to the Committee of Health Human Services Policy. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Thank you very much for the...
Bill as amended has been adopted. Thank you for coming. The meeting adjourned. I hope this is the last one.
Funny guy.
Meeting adjourned.